This is the Ingles Information Aisle with Leah McGrath, helping you eat healthy, feel great, and understand your nutrition. Now, here's your host, Ingles dietitian Leah McGrath.
Good Saturday morning. Welcome to the Ingles Information Aisle. This is Leah McGrath, your Ingles dietitian, and today we're going to be talking to somebody way far away from Western North Carolina, in Iowa, and her name is Michelle Miller. She's joining us by phone from Iowa. That's where you are, Michelle, right?
Yep, Northeast Iowa.
Okay. How's the weather today?
It's actually, we've gotten a little bit of a heat wave. It's got up to about 20 degrees. I think last week it got down to about negative 10. So it's been very, very cold. I'm ready for summer already.
Is there snow on the ground out there?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Lots of snow. I have a feeling it's going to be a long winter.
Okay. And if you're wondering why we're talking with Michelle, Michelle is very active in the social media space, and she is a very prominent voice in that space to try and help consumers understand a little bit more about the world of agriculture and farming. So, and in that role, she goes by the Twitter handle and social media handle of Farm Babe. So if you are on Twitter or Facebook, look for Farm Babe or The Farm Babe, and you will see a very pretty picture of Michelle Miller. And we're going to be talking to her a little bit about some of the challenges about communicating the truth about agriculture. What are some of the misunderstandings and myths that are out there, and what kind of frustrates her the most? But first, we want to kind of backtrack a little bit. And when I was talking to Michelle a little earlier today, I said, I had no idea that this was your background. So, Michelle, you grew up in a farming community or on a farm?
Yeah. So growing up, my best friend had a farm. So every day after school, we would do chores on the farm. We would ride horses, and I was in 4-H. So I was always really interested in agriculture. And all the way up and even into high school, you know, you take those tests when you're a senior in high school. It says what you should do. You talk to your guidance counselor, and every aptitude test I took or whatnot, they all said I should go into agriculture and farming. And I always really loved working with animals. But I, you know, had ignored all that, and I wanted to see what else was out there. So I actually moved to Los Angeles, of all places.
Wow. From Iowa? Was that where you grew up, in Iowa?
I grew up in Wisconsin, actually.
Okay, in
so,
Wisconsin.
Yeah,
okay.
Just a few hours from where I live now. So.
And where did you end up going to school out in L.A.?
I actually have like a fashion background, believe it or not. I went to the Fashion Institute of Design and Merchandising right there in downtown L.A.
So, were you just like a fish out of water going from kind of a more of a rural community in Wisconsin to LA? I mean, were you like the odd one out?
Yeah, you know, it was really cool because a lot of my college roommates were kind of in the same boat as me. You know,
Oh, okay.
I think when you go to college, I mean, it's not uncommon for a young person to say, I want to see what else is out there, you know. But yeah, I mean, I moved to LA, and I mean, I had never been west of Iowa, really, you know.
Oh, okay. So
first time I've seen a mountain, first time I'd seen an ocean, first time I'd ever heard of Starbucks.
Oh, yeah.
So all these things. I moved there when I was like 19. So yeah, it was a really, really cool experience, though, to be out there as a young person
That must have been a little scary for your folks. I mean, we're sending you halfway across the country to, you know, LA, which, you know, it's a big city. It's just totally different. Good for them that they were willing to do that.
Yeah, you know, I give my parents a lot of credit for that. I mean, they've always been pretty supportive and encouraging me to do what I want to do in life and follow my dreams. And, I mean, throughout my 20s, I did a lot of traveling as well, you know, kind of backpacked through Europe, and I lived in China and have really been a bit of a globetrotter and all that jazz. And I don't think I could have done it without the support of my parents, you know, encouraging me, you know, you can do anything you want. And really just following my passion. I've always really been interested in learning about different people and cultures and, you know, being in a small town to a big city. I mean, I just kind of appreciate a little bit of everything, you know. So It's been a fun journey for sure.
Yeah. And I saw on your website that like one of the little taglines is she went from rodeo to rodeo. So can you tell everybody what that means?
Yeah. So my degree is in visual communications from the Fashion Institute. And my first job out of college was actually working for Gucci on Rodeo Drive, of all places.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. So going from rodeo to the rodeo, I mean, it's like, yeah, I'm a farmer now in rural Iowa. You know, I moved here for my boyfriend. You know, I fell in love with the farmer and my Prince Farming, I call him.
I love that.
Yeah. And so, you know, I'm out here now and it's literally like my life has gone from a 180. If somebody would have asked me, hey, you know, you have this degree in working on Rodeo Drive, I probably would have laughed if I would have known that I'd be raising sheep someday.
Yeah, no kidding.
So my life's come full circle for sure.
Now, you know, here in Western North Carolina, one of the things you see on TV quite frequently, especially if you're up late at night, is you don't have to be lonely at farm. You know that one? Is that how you met Prince Farming?
No. But I do love that, though. I get jokes about that a lot. No. You know, like I said, I was a big city girl for a while. I lived in L.A., Chicago. I moved to Florida, and I just kind of became a bartender on the beach, and I traveled the world, and bartending gave me the flexible schedule that to allow me to achieve these goals. Like, I made a goal to visit every continent by the time I was 30. And so I was able to kind of save up a lot of money, and then I had a really great boss who knew about my goals, and she let me take a few weeks off here and there to, you know, kind of travel. I'd come back and work and save and then travel. And one day when I was bartending, in walked in a very tall, strong, attractive Iowa farmer.
Yes.
And he hit on the bartender and it worked.
Oh, that's
here I am.
What is a great story.
Well, I know. It's pretty great.
If you're just tuning in, this is going to be a fun conversation with Michelle Miller. We know her on social media as Farm Babe. You can find her website as farmbabe.org. And she's on Twitter as It's The Farm Babe on Twitter. But she is a big advocate for agriculture. And we're going to be talking to her more about why she's so passionate about being a voice in the space. Stay tuned to the Ingalls Information Aisle. Welcome back to the Ingalls Information Aisle. This is Leah, your Ingalls dietitian. I'm talking with Michelle Miller. You may know her on social media as The Farm Babe. And she has been telling us a little bit about her transition from growing up in Wisconsin to moving to the West Coast, to LA, to go to fashion design school, being a bartender in Florida, and then meeting her Prince Farming, as she refers to him, and ending up on a farm in Iowa. So, Michelle, before we get too far along about into this, tell us a little bit about the farm you're currently living on.
Yeah, so my boyfriend is a fifth generation farmer, and he grows corn, soybeans, oats, alfalfa. We're really big into conservation, and we also we raise black Angus beef cattle as well as lamb, sheep as well. So
it's really diversified, a diversified operation. So it's not just one kind of crop that you're growing.
No, yeah, and his parents also own an agribusiness, and his brother is a soil scientist. So we're always kind of working with different conservation. We do crop rotations. We hold the award for Farmers of the Year in soil and water conservation, so that's pretty exciting. And then with our agribusiness, we do a lot of sales and services for different local farmers if they need feed or seeds or any type of custom grain hauling or storage or anything like that. We basically anything a farmer needs, we can service. So it's we definitely keep busy with all the different things that we do. We wear many hats, and then I do a little bit more of the sales and marketing and do the farmers markets with some of our local beef and lamb to the community. So
how big is the farm that you and you said his name was Doug, right?
Doug, yep.
How big is the farm that you're on? How many acres?
We have 2,000 acres.
Wow.
And then I've got 65 ewes for breeding, so that'll get about 120 lambs each year. And then I think, gosh, I think we might be up to like maybe 300 or 400 head of beef cattle now.
See, I don't know. Have you ever been to this area in the southeast, Asheville, North Carolina? Have you ever been down here?
Yeah, I have.
Oh, you have?
Very pretty area, yeah.
So it's so different because we, you know, it is very, in the western North Carolina, you know, we're right by the Great Smoky Mountains, and it is very mountainous. And so you would never find a farm that big in this area. I think the typical farm size around here might be averaging at like 60 or 70 acres. That probably you would probably find bigger tracts like that. Maybe not even quite that large, but bigger tracts in the eastern part of our state in North Carolina where it's flatter, but not never up here in the mountains. There's just not that much land that's.
Oh, yeah, I believe it.
Yeah.
I know. I think that's the other thing, too, why we're so into conservation, right? Because there's only so much land and
right.
The population is growing by 200,000 people every day. So, where we are in Iowa, we're very lucky because we do have so much wide open space on this
right.
flat land and this very fertile soil. So we're pretty lucky up here, but it's definitely probably comparing apples to oranges a
yeah.
little bit with what we do with what you guys might do down there. So.
Well, and I think that's another really important thing that you sort of alluded to is that when people talk about farming or agriculture, if they make big generalizations about farmers or farms or agriculture, then that really shows me sometimes that they don't understand it at all because, you know, it's like a fingerprint. No two farmers are exactly alike. No two farms are exactly alike. You know, even from year to year, the crops or the animals that people raise are not exactly alike. So like broad generalizations about farming, that to me gets me a little bit, that's a red flag for me when people make generalizations about, you know, big that once they say things like big ag or something like that just drives me
it's
a little crazy
true.
yeah
And we don't even have a lot of employees, right? I mean, like with 2,000 acres, the way that we can do it now with technology is it's like my boyfriend can do all that pretty much himself with the help of maybe a couple family members during planting and harvesting, you
mm-hmm.
know? I mean, everything is so automated. It's so computer generated. We have such bigger and better equipment and technology. And big ag is like, I mean, it's precision ag, you know? It's we can do 2,000 acres better than we could do, 200 acres,
sure.
you know, not that long ago. I mean, technology has really allowed us to do a lot, which is important. I mean, we're less than 2% of the population are farmers, and we're expected to feed everybody, right? So we need this technology, and we need people to connect to us and learn more about what we do and why so that people really understand it. And, I mean, that's just really what I try to do as the Farm Babe, is try to encourage people to talk to us and learn from us rather than maybe like a journalist in a big city that wrote an article that maybe has never farmed an acre a day in their life. You know what I mean? Like they just might not know, you know?
Well, and I think that's also something that you just said that only – that's like the statistic that most people are not aware of. And I think it's actually less than 2% of the population – can call themselves or identify as farmers where their income comes from farming. It's just, and that, you know, maybe back in the 1950s, we were looking at maybe 50% of the, I don't know, maybe it wasn't that high in the 1950s, but it's a big dramatic difference as we've headed into the 20th and then the 21st century, how few people are actually making their living from farming. It's kind of amazing. And one of the things that you also said, Michelle, is that, you know, it's possible for you all to manage this large operation with a minimum of people. But again, that's going to depend on what you're growing or raising. Like if you were doing, for example, sweet potatoes where you have to harvest it by hand, or if you had an apple orchard or a cherry orchard, you'd have to have teams of workers to harvest things, right?
Yeah. It's crazy. This summer I went out to California to the Salad Bowl capital of the world up in Salinas, California, where
right.
they do, just I want to say, I think it was like 35,000 acres of vegetables.
Wow.
And when you see how hard these people work, and literally every single head of lettuce is cut by hand, it's just insane. I mean, yeah. Our crops are so resilient, and everything can be done with a machine.
Right.
So when you see these vegetables, it's also made me pretty passionate about ending food waste, right? Because it's like you see how hard these people work, and you cut every piece of cauliflower by hand or do everything. It's like the amount of work is just insane. Like,
yeah.
I always encourage everybody to talk to farmers, learn about what we do and why, and also try to help with food waste and
yeah.
kind of preserving what we have, because there isn't a lot of farmers. And it's technology with what we do versus what you guys might do there or on the West Coast or whatever. It's all very different.
Stay tuned to the Ingalls Information. I'm talking with Michelle Miller, Farm Babe. We're going to talk more about what she does and how she does it to advocate for farming. Welcome back to the Ingalls Information Hour. This is Leah, your Ingalls dietitian. I'm talking with Michelle Miller. I first ran into Michelle online I've never met her. Full disclosure, Michelle, have you and I ever met? We've never met.
Someday, hopefully.
Someday. And I became aware of her voice in the social media space. On first, I think it was Twitter, Michelle, and then on Facebook. And I became conscious of this person who was really trying to do a lot of myth busting and try and help consumers become more aware of some of the reality when it came to farming. So Michelle, how did you go from here's my little idea of what happened. So you meet Prince Farming, aka Doug, you fall madly in love, you all head off and end up back in Iowa on his farm. You get your little sheep and you're having fun with the sheep. And then what was the trigger that made you say, I need to start talking about agriculture. I need to start explaining to people about agriculture. How did you become the farm babe?
Yeah, so, you know, it was really interesting just like being in a big city and being just really disconnected with how food is produced, going from that life to the farm life and learning from all these really intelligent people around me. Just farmers, if you get to know some farmers, they are some of the smartest people you'll ever meet.
I agree, yes.
Yeah, I mean, their devotion to the environment, to animal care, to the science, everything that we do is a science, right? And I see all these misinformed people online. And one day I just said, you know what? I spend a lot of time trying to educate people online. Maybe I should just start my own page.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't think much of it. It's been 2 years now that I started my page, a little over 2 years ago. And I thought, maybe I get like 1,000 likes, you know, it'll just be a little hobby. And now I've got almost 50,000 followers, and now I do, I have a column on agdaily.com, so I do writing, I do public speaking, I do some farm tours and write about different experiences where I try to visit with different livestock producers or farmers and just educate people about it. But, yeah, it's been a really crazy, fun journey. I mean, I think when I first learned that my boyfriend was, you know, growing GMOs and stuff like that,
mm-hmm.
I learned about the benefit of modern crop technology, you know, like GMOs being a helpful tool. The more I just educate people, you know, like we all kind of have the same common goal, right? Like every consumer wants to feed their family what's best for them. We care about the environment. We care about all these, we have the same common goal, right? Animal care, environmental care, all of these things. So the more I learn that it doesn't necessarily boil down to the labeling or the marketing as much as it boils down to management. But I want people to talk to us and learn about what we do and why, really. So that's really just kind of why I started everything and just kind of continue going and encouraging people to talk to us.
You know, and I really think that's so important. I think for me, I started probably about 4 years ago because I thought, you know, I need to start talking about what some of our farmers here are doing and why they're doing it. And one of my first posts was about a tomato farmer who's in Western North Carolina. He's probably a fifth generation too. And one of the questions I had for him was, What do you say to people when they ask you if you use pesticides? And he said, well, I tell them I have to use pesticides because if I weren't going to be using pesticides, I wouldn't have anything to sell. And he's like, you know, I still remember that. He said, it's not like, you know, Silent Spring here. You know, there's all kinds of, there's bees, there's beetles, there's birds, everything. He said, I use what I need to use when I need to use it. I'm not going to drench my crops in pesticides. That's not how it works. And but I think that that's one of the biggest misconceptions that people have, thanks to a lot of marketing, is that farmers, conventional farmers, drench their crops or douse their crops with pesticides. And if somebody says that to you, how would you respond?
You know, I'm glad you brought that up because I think pesticides are such an important tool in the toolbox for us. And it really is, without the use, we call them crop protectant products, right? Like it's a little bit more of a scientific term. But without the use of crop protectant products, up to 40% of the world's production would be lost. Mm-hmm. So they are a very important tool. They're also used in organic farming as well. That's a common popular misconception, is that people think when they buy organic, it means no pesticides, which couldn't be further from the truth.
Right.
They use more natural products, which are a little bit more older and they're not as effective. So sometimes they actually have to use more of them. But it doesn't really matter, right? Like whether you're growing organic, GMO, non-GMO, whatever it is, no matter what type of crop you're using, the dose always makes the poison.
Right.
So part of our agribusiness is that we actually own like a pesticide application business, right? We help farmers control diseases or insect devastation or we have to get rid of weeds, right? Because they compete with the crop for the nutrients. You wouldn't have a crop if you didn't use pesticides, right? I mean, they're a very important part. But the dose we use ranges anywhere from about 1 to 22 ounces per acre, right? So even if you're looking at like the high end, 22 ounces per acre, that's less than 2 soda cans over an area of land the size of a football field.
Yeah.
So I think sometimes people hear things and fear sells, right? People think, oh, I have to buy this because if I don't, I'm doing this and this is bad. But there's really no data behind it. Like if you really examine the facts and talk to farmers about what we do exactly, specifically, and really understand the toxicology behind it, it makes a whole lot more sense.
Well, I think one of the things too, Michelle, is that we need to remind consumers that the USDA does test produce routinely, and they don't test just one or two pieces of produce. They test like 10,000 different types of produce, and they test for pesticide residue. And the amount of produce that even tests at levels that would be like distinguishable is such a small percentage.
It is so minimal.
People are worrying about something that they really don't need to be worrying about. What I tell people is, whether you're buying organic, conventional, whether you're buying it from a supermarket or a farmer's market, wash it and eat it. And we've run to the end of our segment. I can't believe it. Make sure if you have questions about farming or food, find Michelle as Farm Babe at farmbabe.org or find her on Twitter as The Farm Babe. Thanks for joining us, Michelle.
Thank you for having me. It was a great conversation with you today.